for federal agencies, we see a lot of confusion around how you provide reasonable accommodations, and there are a lot of misconceptions about the cost. The fact is that 80% of accommodations cost less than $1,000, and 50% cost less than $500, and many cost nothing. And we have a lot of resources for employers who have questions on how to provide accommodations. We have information on our website, EEOC.gov, and we also refer people to the Department of Labor's Job Accommodation Network. The Department of Defense also has a CAP program, which has a wealth of information on accommodations. So we're working across the government to share those resources, to show employers that there are many ways to build inclusive workplaces for people with disabilities. We have some specific steps I'd be happy to share with you, and a very important one is having a commitment from the top. You really need your agency leadership at the highest levels talking about these issues and impressing on people how important it is. Establishing actual hiring goals is also very effective, because we've seen what we measure, you know, is what happens. Measuring things really helps to drive progress. I talked about our Schedule A hiring authority, and that's an important area we have. Mandatory training can be very useful for all management officials on these issues, because a lot of times people want to do the right thing, they're just not sure how. So we need to make sure we're providing those skills. We also need to ensure there's accountability about it in performance appraisals, and that there are, you know, consistent policy statements from agency heads and leaderships about what they want to see people doing, to use our special hiring authorities and other avenues to expand opportunities for people with disabilities. We also have opportunities to use workplace flexibility to address, you know, many issues that people have across the federal government. So we're working to innovate, and we're constantly looking for ways we can improve.
With regards to the EEOC itself, perhaps ironically, I know the EEOC has ranked fairly high among agencies in the percentage of employees who have filed discrimination complaints. I know that's not just about disabilities. But given that you've been there in the leadership position for just over a month now, how are you addressing that within the EEOC, or how do you plan to address it?
Well, that's an important question, because we take our complaint process as a real opportunity for us to understand better the challenges that our employees may be having, the opportunities for us to educate our managers better on building inclusive workplaces for people with disabilities. So we are doing a number of things, which includes educating our folks more on things that we can be doing, opportunities on some of the issues that I've talked about before, including reasonable accommodations, and ensuring that we're getting the information we need to have a timely response to those complaints.
And when you talk about educating, is it simply that managers don't know where, I mean, perhaps even in the EEOC, don't know where to turn, or are sort of foggy on what their ability is to provide a reasonable accommodation to somebody they supervise?
You know, I think our workforce does know pretty well where to go, because we do have a reasonable accommodation manager who's in charge, and they've done a really good job, I think, in communicating how to respond. I think part of where we can have a greater opportunity is to make sure we're communicating with employees about where we are in the process. Sometimes things may take longer because we need more information, and so there can be frustration that the agency may not be acting as quickly as people would like. So I do see an opportunity for us to communicate better about what we are doing, and to keep people apprised that we're, sometimes things are happening behind the scenes to try to respond to complaints or concerns, and people may not always know everything that's going on. So I think the communication piece is an important one for us.
And I think that's a good segue. I wanted to ask you a couple of things about the EEOC overall, as you are the new leader. I mean, for one thing, and we've talked about this on Federal News Radio, you have a very high backlog of cases, I think by some reports around 70,000. How do you plan to tackle this backlog? Do you have a plan yet?
We are working hard on those issues. We know that delay in our federal sector process does not serve anyone, doesn't serve the individuals who are working hard across the federal government agencies. It doesn't, you know, serve the management of federal government agencies or our interest in promoting equal employment opportunity. So that has been an important area for us. We know that in the past 4 years, budget and resources have been some of the real root causes of the delay. We've had a hiring freeze, but the good news is that, you know, we are now rebuilding. We are being able to hire across the federal government. We've hired new AJs, and we've hired others throughout our federal sector process that we think can really help us make a difference in ensuring we are moving, you know, each case as quickly as possible. We have, you know, because we had, but you know, the furloughs, the shutdown, we really weren't able to rebuild our staff to keep pace with the workload. But we want to make sure that we have a efficient and fair process. So we have a new case management plan for fiscal year 2014 that we have seen improving resource allocation and bringing about earlier resolution of cases. So it allows us to both respond to the commission priorities that we've identified and that are on our website, and it also allows us to use our resources to ensure we're putting the time and attention into the cases that need it most and moving things as efficiently as possible. So it's a pilot right now, but we've seen it working really well. We're expanding to other offices, and we're looking for feedback from folks who have participated in it so that we, in the sort of the hearing process in those offices, so that we can continually improve it.
Sounds like a bit of a triage situation.
I would say what we're trying to do is really prioritize the use of our resources. We're trying to identify those issues that need more time and attention, that may be more complicated. Where things may be more straightforward, we're trying to reach resolutions and move those issues and cases along more quickly. One of the things we're doing is in those pilots is having our administrative judges have an early meeting with the parties so that they can identify the issues in dispute and plan an efficient resolution process. And it engages people earlier in how they're going to move that case quickly. We also had an important report from the federal sector, which is available on our website, that identified the top reasons that we see agencies making mistakes and dismissing complaints early on in the process. And so by identifying that, we did a very systematic analysis, going back and looking at the appeals that come up to us and the reasons we are overturning agency decisions. And by identifying some of these common mistakes that agencies are making, we're hoping to really create some efficiency so that cases are not bounced out of the system when we should be processing them, and that we don't have to spend that time, you know, in the appeal process because people are making decisions right the first time.
We're speaking with Jenny Yang. She's the chair of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. When you have people who have disabilities, and in fact, they might have some sort of time-sensitive situation where they really need a resolution quickly, they can't afford to wait months, are you able to prioritize or move people like that to the top, or is that something that you hope to do?
I do think that would be a very important thing for us to look into with our both our strategic enforcement plan. We have a federal sector complement plan. We've identified issues that are particularly important to people with disabilities, and we know that through our Office of Federal Operations, we are prioritizing issues involving things such as qualification standards that operate to screen people out because of disability. You know, for example, having, you know, requiring medical examinations or other screens. I think where individuals who are reviewing these claims see particularly urgent, time-sensitive matters, they also have that discretion to try to put the time and attention into those and expedite those cases, you know, under our efforts to really prioritize. So I think they do that all the time, and I think there's also an opportunity for us to raise awareness where particular cases may need more attention.
You also mentioned that you have hired staff, and that seems to be a key part of your strategy to reduce this backlog. How many people have you hired, and how many do you expect to hire in fiscal 2015?
We have hired over 300 people last year across the agency. In fiscal year 2015, we are still working out those numbers, so we don't really have them to share, but we are doing some significant hiring. Also, we will be starting that soon.
You've been in this seat for what, about 2 months now?
Yes, almost 2 months.
Okay. So, Jenny Yang, what would you personally like to accomplish while you have this seat as the chair of the EEOC?
On this particular issue, we want to ensure that the abilities of people across the federal government are what we're focusing on, and that we're getting more people who have disabilities and are qualified to work throughout the federal sector. More broadly, one of my priorities is to ensure we're reaching out to more populations. We know that there are still many communities across the federal government that actually have no idea that we exist, that don't understand there are federal protections in the workplace. So we've been working affirmatively to reach out to new immigrant communities and others that may not fully understand our protections, so that we can make sure our resources are serving all those across the country. And I also want to make sure we're engaging more employers to help find solutions that promote equal employment opportunity, because we know there are many employers out there leading the way and adopting policies that are both promoting equal employment opportunity and building stronger workplaces, because the bottom line is then they're making job-related decisions and they're not relying on stereotypes that may not relate to actual job qualifications. So I think the more we can engage the employer community, those at the highest levels and throughout, in seeing those opportunities and investing in those, we can really fulfill the promise of all of our civil rights statutes.